Joining us now is a man whose team is not off to a questionable start. They're off to a great start, a very, very great start. And as a fan of the great New Jersey Devils, I couldn't be more perplexed by any of it, so we're going to ask him about it. He's Ray Shiro, and he joins us now on the Merrick vs. Wyshynski podcast. Ray, welcome to the show, sir. Before the season, you said that John Hines was going to have a offensive bent to his coaching, that the Devils would be an offensive team as one of the things that we looked forward to with this coach. But even you, sir, could not have imagined this amount of offense out of this team.
Yeah, no, I guess to go back on what I said, I actually didn't say anything about offense. I told what we have talked about is how we wanted to play and in practice, and that was to be fast, attacking, and supportive. And honestly, the fast part of it was not anything really about scoring goals. It was thinking fast, playing faster, supportive hockey all over the ice, and attacking was more of not just trying to split attacking defense, but being aggressive. And, you know, it wasn't going to happen in the first week, the first month, maybe the first, but that's where we wanted to get to, and that was based upon, predicated on what we were doing in practice from day one, that John wanted to institute, and then, you know, get a guy like Kyle Palmieri was fitting to that type of thing. John Moore can really skate and get up the ice and defend. But in terms of playing more offensively, our power play has been very good. I think it's fourth in the league. Our penalty killing is going well now and started slowly. But, you know, I think it's a combination of players playing better, and that's what you need from a Travis Zajac and a Henrik, and a guy like Stepniak's jumped in, and then Palmieri's played well. And then, Andy Green's our captain now and has really been an underappreciated player. And, of course, you got Schneider in net and, playing very well for us. So, you know, that part of it, that's we need to be competitive, and we don't have those guys up front or that are going to score 50 goals or 40 goals, but it's almost by committee, and they've really bought into what John has been talking about and preaching, and a lot of credit to the coaching staff and certainly to the players.
Ray, I think you need to throw a couple more names in there as well. And I think one is David Schlemko, and the other is, of course, Lee Stempniak. It almost seemed as if, you know, when you went about your job in the off season, it's almost as if you said to yourself, I need to satisfy two requirements. One, can you skate? And two, can you produce offense? Because I look at your signings in the off season, and that's what sort of stands out to me.
Yeah, I think, you know, with Schlemko in particular, and I had those, and I think part of it also was creating some depth in the organization, and guys like, you know, Seth Hagelson had played maybe 20 or 30 games last year, but he didn't need waivers. He's in the minors, still developing right now, doesn't need waivers or anything like that. So Schlemko and John Moore, those two signings, I think, have been very good for us, and Schlemko is a guy who ended up in Calgary last year, was acclaimed on waivers three times, but certainly for us has been very good, a very good find. And offensively, he's very smart and a lot of deception in his game at the offensive blue line, and a real pro. He's only 27 or 28 years old, and Stempniak, of course, came in on a tryout, and, you know, people are very familiar with Lee, but he's quietly always goes about his business on and off the ice, a very good person, and is very reliable, and he's a good hockey player, and guys like that have really stepped up for us. And Camilleri's having quietly a very good season. Once again, he had 27 goals last year, but it was about being able to skate, think the game. Competitiveness is another thing that you're always looking for, and I think we've had that throughout our lineup. We need that almost every game to have a chance to win, and guys have really bought into that, and we played in Edmonton the other night. I don't think we were very competitive, and we lost pretty candidly, and we can't have it and have a chance to win. So guys have really bought in, and, you know, you want to be competitive in the league like every other team, and so far they've been doing that.
And it's not just the guys you bought in, Ray. It's the price tags attached to those guys. I mean, you look at Stempniak, Tutu, Farnham, O'Neill, Schlemko, all these guys under $1 million. Palmieri is only making $1.4 million. This is not to throw this term around because it gets abused a lot in sports, but this is a kind of a money ball team, isn't it? How much did you rely on analytics to try to get the right guys in there at the right prices?
Well, I think you're always looking at, especially, you know, Lou Lamoriello and Josh Harrison, David Blitzer, our owners, had hired Sonny Mehta as the first in-house analytics guy well before I got here, and he's joined we have two of them, actually, with Sai also. He's from Harvard, played JV hockey at Harvard. The coaches, you know, are really into it, which is really good because we can do all we want to do, and, the game, everybody is using analytics in industry, in sports, certainly now in hockey over the last 2-3 years, much more than they ever did. And I think you always, whether it's scouting reports, analytics, before you make a decision, you're always running all those things, and eventually you have to make that decision. And but again, when you take a look at, you know, some of the value guys like, you know, Stempniak, and we were beneficiaries like some other teams, and it was a very, very tight market for free agents this summer with the cap not rising like people thought, and we waited and waited on a few guys and, you know, and took advantage of that. But, you know, they've come in and done a good job, and Sergei Kalinin was a free agent out of Russia, 24 years old. He's fitting well with us. And so that's what you're trying to do and get those value guys, but that play the way you hopefully want to play the game in terms of the buy into the competitiveness and, you know, and the way we want to go. So far that's been working pretty well for us. And Talbomary, you know, he's under contract just for this year, and then he's a restricted free agent with our rights. So he'll be, you know, based upon young guy, 24 years old, I'm sure he'll be getting a raise as it goes. But that's okay. If he earns it, then we're happy to have him.
Ray, before he came on, we were talking a little bit about shot blocking with the Brendan Gallagher news out 6 weeks after blocking a shot. And I was trying to make the point that everybody likes it until they don't. We all love a shot block. Hey, that's fantastic. Oh, our first-line right winger is out 6 weeks after taking one on the hand. When you see one of your key players, top six guys, go down and block a shot, is it a double-edged sword for you when that happens?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, especially, you know, they're killing penalties, let's say, and, you know, some top players in the league kill penalties, some don't. But, you know, that's just the way the game is sometimes. And, you know, we came out of the lockout in 05-06, and, you know, there's much more room in the offensive zone, and the neutral zone was shrinked. Well, teams are shrinking in their defensive zone, and there's not so their shot blocking's a that's where they are. It's hard to run out to the point and run over here. So teams are shrinking. I'm not sure if that's a good thing or bad thing, or we go back the way it was before. But you see it around the league, and it's almost, you know, the way fighting almost used to be. Oh, I'm gonna pump up the team with a fight. Well, now it's a shot block or a gritty. Like, mm-hmm. That is part of the camaraderie of a team. But again, those things like a broken finger or a broken ankle or a broken foot or. Boy, oh boy, and luckily a number of these players now are wearing the stuff on their skates, the shot blocking stuff. But, yeah, it's certainly tough to watch sometimes because these guys can really shoot it and you never know. But it's no different than in practice. You know, you get with a puck or, you know, a few years ago in warm-up, Taylor Hall falls and gets, you know, he's out. So a lot of freak things happen, but it is part of the game, the shot blocking, and some do it better than most. And like with anything, there's got to be a reason to it, or else the goalie's kind of looking at you saying, I kind of had it and you screened me. So, I mean, there's a timing issue for it, and especially on the PK, it comes in handy.
Ray, you obviously have a chance now, you know, in your first full year here to get a good glimpse of this young D core that the Devils have, Merrill, Jelena, Severson, these cats. How much of that is evaluation? How much of that is saying, okay, we've got this collection of young guys that clearly there's going to be a market for if we wanted to improve up front at some point? Is that part of this? Is evaluating that how rich the cupboard might be on D, or are you pretty sure that this is going to be the foundation for the team going forward?
I think you're always evaluating, and especially as getting to know the players, and we're not even 20 games in yet, but yeah, you're getting to know the players, and guys like Eric Gillina and John Merrill have been in and out of our lineup, and that's almost not so much by their play, but it's been the play of Schlemko and Johnny Moore. So, but that's okay. I mean, they're young defensemen, and part of it is, you know, the coaching staff mandate in terms of on and off the ice improvement. And when the player is back in the lineup, you give him the best chance to succeed and help your hockey team, or you just throw him in, hoping he does well, and all of a sudden his confidence is shot and he has another bad game. So that's part and parcel of it, but it is an evaluation. It's a learning thing because, you know, they've been through several coaches in New Jersey, and Scott Stevens, I think, did a good job with these guys, and now it's Elaine Nazardeen. But, you know, they're young players, and they make mistakes, and no different than any other player. But, you know, I think we had an example. We had, you know, Eric Gillina had a poor game, cost maybe two goals in Ottawa about a month ago, and the thing would be usually to take him out of the lineup, but our coaching staff really wanted to go back to the next game. They monitored his minutes, didn't put him on the power play, played 10 minutes in Buffalo, played a solid 10 minutes. That's, you know, that's good. But they're young D, and continue to work with him, evaluate them, you know, down the line as to where things go. You don't know, but I think we're in the evaluation process of all their players, let alone our young defensemen.
Ray, I've always felt that hockey is, to me anyhow, a 3-2 game. I'm happy with 5 goals a game. That puts a smile on my face, and I'm pretty happy at the end of it. With everyone now screaming for increased goal scoring and widen the nets and shrink the goalie equipment and get rid of block shots, is there a magical score for you? How many goals do you think there should be in an NHL game?
I don't think it's a magical score for me. I can only speak for myself, but I'm you know, we've seen 2-1 games. They're really, really exciting. And, you know, you don't need a 6-4 game to have an exciting hockey game. You know, having said that, I do believe the goalie equipment needs to be streamlined. And I'm finally happy to see it's probably going that direction. And Corey Schneider, our goaltender, is on the competition committee. It is. And I think a lot of the goaltenders want to see that. But, you know, I think we have to be cognizant of the fact that I'm not for bigger nets at all at this point. I do think the goalie equipment gets modified and streamlined. But I think we have to face facts here is that there's 4 good lines in every team that can skate, that can defend. You've got 3, 4, 5 coaches in every team. And you've got goaltenders that are 6'3", 4'5", 6'8", and they take up a lot of the net, but they're athletic and they're good. And back in the day when you're having those, you know, 6'4 games, 8'3 games, 10, 15 years ago or 20 years ago, the goaltenders, you know, they're lucky they had a goaltending coach. Not every line back checked that hard. You know, and now all these guys have goaltending coaches and a development goalie coach with their NHL team or minor league team, but they all have goalie coaches in the summertime. And it's a position that is greatly improved, and the athleticism of these guys, face facts, these guys are good athletes. And, you know, and it's hard to score sometime, but I don't believe the score dictates or, you know, it makes it a great game. But I think the goalie equipment is the first thing to start at, and let's take a look at that. And provided safety first for the goaltenders, we get it. I think we can accomplish that and kind of see where that takes us first.
And then one of the other sort of plot lines early on in the season here, Ray, is a lot of people wondering where the trades are, you know, wondering if there needs to be something the league can do. Maybe this comes up in the next CBA, who knows. Do we have to kind of rethink the way we're doing this thing to kind of open up and loosen up the trade market a little bit? Because in talking to you and in talking to some other people, it seems almost impossible to make a move until we get to the deadline.
I don't know. To me, the salary cap is a salary cap, but I think the league did in this last CBA made a modification that helps trades and is retention of salary. And if that wasn't there, then I'm not sure how many trades you would see. But I think, you know, there are – everybody's got – when you're making a trade for your team this year, every manager's gotten – you know, the trades are happening at the deadline. A lot of those guys are expiring contracts. And – but if you're trading in season or you're picking some of the deadline that's 2, 3, 4 years left on their deal, you're always, okay, where's the cap going to be, you know, in a year or 2, 3 years? You don't really know. So you have to be pretty careful as to what you're doing. And that's part of the planning, part of the management. But in terms of anything to open up the trade market, I'm not sure, because even though you've got, you know, a lot of teams are at or over the cap in LTI, well, you know, that's where they are. And it's a dollar-for-dollar trade sometime. And at the deadline is the best and only time where, you know, the pro rata salary comes in handy if you're not in LTI. And you can fit guys in at that point. Then the rosters expand at that point beyond 23 at the trade deadline. So as long as you have the cap room, you can make deals there. But you know, maybe it's managers talk all the time and just evaluating their teams and seeing what's out there and just, you know, calling other managers and kind of keeping in touch. But, you know, I know it's exciting for the fans when they see the trades, but, you know, I can assure you 29 other managers are not sitting on their hands doing anything. So, but I, you know, for anything, I mean, it's, you go back, you know, 5, 7 years where you couldn't retain money. Now you can. Well, maybe there's something else, and that makes sense to increase trades. But, you know, managers always want to do what's best for their team this year, but also, of course, in the future, and that includes the retention of money they take on, or contracts, and where their team's going to go and what the you know, the aspirations are for their team. A lot of teams think they can win the Cup this year and push for it. We did that a lot in Pittsburgh, obviously, and other teams are in different situations and have different goals and in terms of building their team. So it's a happy medium you're trying to find, but, you know, to give you guys something to talk about, we definitely got to get more trades, obviously.
Yeah, we do a regular podcast here, Ray. We could use the info. Listen, I want to finish up my last question for you, Ray. I want to go back to one very specific date. You were very young, so I'm going on kind of a fishing trip here. April 2nd, 1972, your father's coaching the Philadelphia Flyers to play in the Buffalo Sabres. It's the last game of the season. The game is tied at 2. Jerry Meehan lobs one towards Doug Favell, and somehow he misses it. The Buffalo Sabres win the game. With that tie, the Flyers would have qualified for the playoffs. Did you watch the game, and what was your reaction? Because that was heartbreaking for the Flyers.
How do you remember this?
Come on.
I asked him that every day of my life, Ray.
Oh, my God. That's great. I honestly was 9 years old. I remember it as if it was yesterday. I was watching the game in Philadelphia. I was in fourth grade, And not that it hasn't stayed with me or anything, but it's great. And Jerry Meehan came over. All he needed was a tie. It was a 2-2 game. Philadelphia needed a tie. It was my dad's first year coaching the Flyers. And they needed a tie to get into the playoffs. It was 4-4. 2-2, I'm sorry. And then Jerry Meehan came over the blue line, red line to the blue line, and took about a 50-foot shot that eluded Doug Favell, and with 4 seconds left, and 3-2 Buffalo, and that knocked the Flyers out of the playoffs my dad's first year. And I still remember my mom was watching the game with me, and she had a coffee, I think, and the coffee ended up on the wall like she couldn't believe it. Guys, still remember, I was devastated. I was crying, and I was 9 years
oh,
old.
Oh, no.
So, no, it's even, no, it gets worse because I go to school the next day, and it's our first year in Philly, and I'm in fourth grade. I'm walking to the classroom, and I'm still depressed, and, you know, some kid yells at me, "Hey, Shiro, your old man Favell blew it." I'm like, oh, boy, well. So.
Oh, there he goes. Oh,
well,
perfect.
That was pretty perfect. Hey, Sammy, don't worry about it. Tell him thanks. That's about the perfect way it could finish, I think, right?
We're getting a good story out of Ray there, too. That was fun.
That's good.
Mom threw a coffee. Kid was crying.
Yeah.
Flyers lose.
It's hilarious.
Oh. Heartbreak.